Hello, and welcome to the teacher edition of Steve Barclay Ponders Out Loud. The complexity of teaching is both challenging and rewarding, and my curiosity has piqued whenever I explore with teachers the multiple pathways for facilitating student engagement in the exciting world of learning. This podcast looks to serve teachers as they motivate and support their learners. Thanks for listening. I'm delighted that you're here. Exploring classroom freedoms and responsibilities. What are you purposefully planning for shaping the learning environment with your students as this school year begins? A blog post by Emma McDonald titled Freedoms and Responsibilities suggests that our goals as teachers should be to empower students to take part in their own learning while also being held accountable for their behavior and work product. That requires a system of consistency and flexibility. She states that when people are oppressed, they tend to be sullen and eventually they rebel. It's a simple fact of human nature. If your classroom is a dictatorship, ruling with fear and oppressing students, you will develop a classroom environment of resentment. Students may reluctantly obey, but only out of fear of retribution. And eventually, students will rebel in small ways and then increasing ways. When people are given a completely free rein, chaos tends to occur. With no accountability, any behavior becomes acceptable. The leader is treated no differently than anyone else in the group. Initial respect is lost when students see that their leader is unable to maintain control. That happens in classrooms when students make all the rules or the teacher doesn't hold students accountable for their actions. No matter how fun and interesting lessons are, without some structure, a class can turn to chaos. Our classroom management strategies actually are a form of instruction. With a balance of freedoms and responsibilities, you're teaching students skills that they will need in the world. They'll need those skills as they interact with colleagues, bosses, and the community. A link to McDonald's post is in the podcast lead-in. I recently came across the work of Dr. Carla Shalaby. She's the author of Troublemakers, Lessons in Freedom from Young Children at School. She reinforces the need for us to teach and allow students to practice the skills needed for freedom. Quote, every move we make in classroom management is a lesson. Kids are watching us and they are learning. She states that how we manage a space can be a chance to practice freedom instead of modeling control. We can choose a model of power over that generally includes coercion, force, punishment, and exclusion, or we can choose a model of power with, which includes freedoms and responsibilities. Dr. Shalaby shared a Twitter posting that provided 8 questions for teachers to consider while planning classroom management for the beginning of the year. The link to her Twitter post is in the lead-in. Here are her questions with some of my reflections. Her first 2 questions are connected. Are my actions grounded in cultivating safety or control? And the second connecting question, am I defining safety in a way that requires control or freedom? She states, safety results from radical mutual care and responsibly practiced freedom. I see this as the teaching opportunity. The students uncover that this is the appropriate behavior, not because it's the rule, but because I have a responsibility for my safety and the safety of my classroom community members. This is really a place to implement problem solving. Can the students predict safety risk, physical and emotional risk that could occur, and examine appropriate preventive actions? It also opens the door for a student to make a mistake, which leads to an analysis and a learning rather than to a punishment for breaking a rule. Question 3, does enforcing this rule require me to behave like a police officer or an educator? Here's the example she shared. Can we shift from no gum allowed to be mindful of how things you eat or drink in class may impact others? One requires policing, the other requires study and debate. Her example took me back a lot of years to my middle school teaching days. I was frequently at odds with some colleagues and administration for not enforcing the dress code rules. It really wasn't purposeful. If what the student was wearing didn't interrupt teaching or learning, I didn't notice it. Sometimes rules don't only coerce students, they coerce teachers as well. This was well illustrated in an earlier podcast that I recorded with a middle school principal, Kambar Kashaba. He shared how learning from his students about the oppressive dress code rules led to a change. Listen to his voice.
And this is where they very quickly identified our dress code as being racist and sexist. When you put something on for kids to talk about, check your ego at the door, because they're not throwing bouquets at you, right? This is something where I wanted them to be real. How do we get better? So when we started the Social Justice Council, I just asked them, what's on your minds as things that need to improve at our school? Dress code and the enrollment and honors classes were two of their top issues. And then we talked about a couple of other things as well. But as we went into it, I told them, I said, well, listen, let's not just talk about feelings. Who's willing to go out there and find some research for me? They came back. I'm not kidding you. They came back with like 6 articles about around the country, and not just in Virginia. This is an issue where students of color are getting hit with more dress code violations than their counterparts, and girls are getting dress code violations more than boys. So how do we address this? And so I asked them specifically for recommendations of how they would want to tweak our dress code. They identified things like we need to increase the length of the shorts. Like we had it like where the shorts had to go a couple inches above your knee. They're like, we can't find anything fashionable like that. So we raised it to mid-thigh. They asked about having the holes in their jeans. Again, it can only be like an inch above your knee. They wanted to raise those up because that's how fashion was. Girls wanted to wear their leggings without having to have a shirt that covers them down to the middle of their thighs. And so things of that nature. And so as we talked about it, I couldn't really disagree with them. I mean, everything that we approved, when I go to a mall or, to indoor or outdoor mall, I see these people wearing the very clothing that these girls were talking about wanting to wear, and nothing negative is happening from it. So why are we creating a situation that is overly oppressive? One girl told me, she was cited in the magazine, Natalie. She said, I worry more about being dress coded than I am worrying about what I'm going to learn. And Steve, I'm telling you, that day was the day in my heart that I committed that we're going to change this dress code. Because if I have a student feeling that way at my school, and I allow that to continue happening, then shame on me for being the principal of that kind of situation. So I asked them along the whole way, I wanted to empower them to see that they have power in their voice. This is the first time that they really get to practice the democratic process of putting your voice out there. And I'm not talking about politics. I'm just talking about getting your voice out there. And so they did a presentation for our faculty, and they presented 4 different dress code items they wanted to have adjusted. None of the faculty disagreed. Walking into it, I can't tell you that everybody was on board. And after it was over, I can't tell you everybody was on board. But nobody voiced a concern at that time. I shared the results with the parents, asked them to contact me if they had any concerns. Of course, worked in collaboration with my central office. And so we changed the dress code policy. But the best part was We have a video recorded morning announcement program, and I had the four leaders of this program, the Social Justice Club. They came forward and they did the presentation to their peers, their classmates, and they presented the changes. They got all the credit because they deserved it, and it was an inspiring story to see 12, 13, 14 year olds take a chance on take a risk on putting their hearts on the line, knowing that these adults who we've had this policy in place for at least two decades, no changes. They took a chance. It totally paid off. And I'm proud that we updated our dress code, but I'm more proud of the students
for sure
for putting themselves out there and seeing the leadership ability that's within them.
Shalabi's question number four, if a student asks why, will your reason for having the policy stand up to the uniquely smart and relentless scrutiny of 30-plus young people collectively seeking freedom? If not, spare yourself the nightmare of an unwinnable power struggle against the masses. Oh, man, I love that. That is great early on practice. I know that as a parent, there were times that I found myself caught by that question when the only reason I had was because I said so. I know it was time for me to do some reflecting and for me to do some learning. Question number five, does this rule exist only because I happen to have a personal pet peeve? She states, if so, that's cool, but say so. And be prepared to accommodate everyone's pet peeves because the teacher is but one equal member of a class community. Everyone's quirky needs matter. This really is a great way to explore, again, the requirements of community. In order to belong, there are times that I have to submit to choices of others. The key to that relationship is knowing that my chance will come, that I am going to be respected for my needs within the community as well. I frequently address this with students when we're looking at preferred styles of learning. So sometimes the teacher is going to engage the class in an activity that I don't need. It's a game we're going to play. It's a song we're going to sing to help remember something. I find it strange, but knowing that there are classmates who will gain from this, I now know that it's part of my community responsibility. Teacher needs to have that same willingness to accept students' needs if she's going to be asking students to accept hers. Question number six, am I serving kids or the world by having a comprehensive set of rules that eliminate all potential conflict, harm, and drama? She questions, where else can kids get an opportunity to safely practice community care, impact, power, and responses to harm? Art instructor Mariana Magat recently reinforced these thoughts in a blog titled Teaching Freedom, How Learning to Stumble Might Get Us Somewhere Worth Going. Consider how you are creating opportunities for students to make what I like to call safe mistakes. I label it as failure that's not fatal. It's kind of a safety net under the students. Rather than preventing the mistake with a rule or coercion, let the students grow into increasing freedoms as responsibility is learned. Question seven, do I want to model how to use power to manage people in a space, or how to use it to hold and make space? She states, teachers and police officers are often children's first everyday public models of how people use their power in the name of safety. What do we want students to see? Wow, that's a biggie. I can see teachers setting up a round of peer coaching opportunities and discussing what they see across the school and question the why for existing practices. Here's one of mine. I'm in a school watching a group of fifth grade students walking down a hall in single file, stopping at the corner until the teacher arrives, then continuing down the hall as the teacher observes. This may seem cute with preschoolers, but it sure looks like control with 10-year-olds. 10-year-olds who later ride their bike home unsupervised. Shalaby's final question, why do I teach? She suggests that this question would likely be the first question, could be the first question. I see it as circling back. Certainly a question that we should be frequently asking ourselves. Why do I teach? How do my decisions about the classroom space, about the community that we create, how do my decisions impact student learning? I'm pretty sure that the more I can create a freedom learning environment for students, the more likely I am to have one for myself. I'd love to hear your thoughts. Leave me a note or a question at barclaypd.com. And thanks for listening. Thanks for listening in, folks. I'd love to hear what you're pondering. You can find me on Twitter at Steve Barclay, or send me your questions and find my videos and blogs at barclaypd.com.